Hey, what's going on? You know who it is. It is Bruce Jordan, the Michael Jordan of hotels. And of course, I got the best. I always have the best. And we have the greatest here, Chris Green. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Bruce, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Anytime, anytime. You know, the first thing I always ask is, of course, how the hell did you get into the hotel business?
You know, I kind of got in by necessity. So, I was in the restaurant business for about 9 years. I had worked my way up through starting as a kitchen employee, then a kitchen manager, then a general manager, eventually a regional manager overseeing 42 restaurants here in North Florida and South Georgia. I was 29 years old, had a new wife, a couple years, and a baby on the way. And the head of HR called me and he said, "Chris, I got some good news and bad news." And he said, The good news is we sold the company, and the bad news is they're breaking it into pieces and you've got 6 weeks severance. So here I am with a new baby on the way, and I needed something to happen. I've always been an aggressive guy. I looked in the paper and I saw an ad for a human resource director at the Hilton Jacksonville Riverfront. So I went down, put on a suit, went down and sat in the lobby until I saw somebody that looked like the general manager. And I grabbed him and I said, I really want to talk to you about this job. And he said, "Young man, I'm really, busy." And I said, "Listen, I'm your guy. I need this job." So he interviewed me actually and hired me that day on the spot. And that was the beginning of my career.
That is an amazing story. See how persistence always pays off. Because you hear nowadays like, "Oh, I can't find a job. I can't excel in my career." And you just went out there and you literally took it, right?
I had to. I mean, I had all these things in my mind that I had to take care of, my family and my future, and I knew I was good. And the funny part was, I really didn't have any skills to be an HR director, but I knew I could hire people. I knew I could train people. I understood what was right and wrong. I was a person of integrity, and I thought, I can definitely sell this into an HR job, and I did. Now, what actually happened was he had a plan. The GM had a plan to make a change at food and beverage director that I didn't know about. So 90 days later, I became the food and beverage director, and he hired a professional HR director. He just hired me that day thinking he could use me in 90 days. And that was really what started it, was understanding the difference between hotels and restaurants, the varied departments, the ability to do 9 or 10 different roles underneath one roof was really what got me excited about hotels.
I know you went in there and you killed it as a food and beverage director.
I loved it. So it was great. And I learned along the way. Listen, I was by no means perfect. And it took me a long time to learn the things that I learned, but I'm thankful for every opportunity someone gave me. And that's why I love our industry. You don't have to have any formal training. You just got to have a great attitude. You need to be aggressive. You need to be, I wouldn't say a self-promoter, but you need to be self-confident to know what you're capable of. And then ask, say, "I want to do more. Teach me this." There wasn't a day that I wasn't talking with our director of sales about, "Okay, how's the sales process? And what do you need from us in operations? And how do we get better?" And actually, the director of sales at the hotel went on to be our chief commercial officer at Chesapeake, and he was one of the partners that I worked with for over 20 years. So we had a great relationship all the way from the field, all the way through the C-suite.
See, it's all about coming together. If you're constantly battling each other, nothing is going to get done.
No. Nope. Territorialism or just worried about your silo will definitely lead you to
failure. That's just the way it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what inspired you to write the River Guide to Leadership?
That's a great question, Bruce. So I took this trip 20 plus years ago with some friends, and I can't say that day I realized that, oh, this is a leadership story. But what I realized through my career, and at Chesapeake, we were known for taking on challenging opportunities, turning them around, and getting them to face in the right direction. We grew that company from 9 hotels to 45 hotels and $350 million in sales. And then we merged with Remington in 2022 and became part of 130 hotels, where I was honored to serve as president there. And as I saw all these hotels. I tried to count one time, maybe 400 or 500 hotels that we've transitioned over my career and staffs. I noticed common themes about the hotels and the leadership in those hotels. And the hotels that were doing well had one consistent theme, and the ones that weren't were not. And it really was pretty simple to identify. And I tried to figure out a way to make it simple, the messaging that we wanted as we took on a new hotel into the management platform. And this whole river theme became an analogy that I thought about. And so if you think about it, a business, when it's running well, is flowing all in one direction. The associates, and I like to talk, I give this speech called the riverbanks. And I talk about the associates. You can be in a different canoe. The director of sales can be in one canoe and the GM can be in another. As long as all the canoes are headed down the river towards the same goal, there's room in there for freedom inside those riverbanks. I always used to say my role as the head of the company or as the head of the hotel, as general manager, or you as a department head, was to be the riverbanks. So when your team got towards the edge of the river, you just gently corrected them back to the center. And when things were going well, businesses take off like riding the rapids. And as I gave this speech years after years after years, I kept thinking about this trip I took and all the lessons I learned on that trip, from preparation to how to work as a team, to how to pick the people in your boat and why they're in your boat, to undercurrents that you can see downriver. And also I learned something very, very important. And that was, that I can't say I knew it my younger years, was that the leader of the boat when you're in a raft is in the back, not in the front. And actually on the picture on the front of my book, the person that's in the front of the book is a very young, aggressive 30-year-old in the front of the boat, and that's me, riding the bull, they call it. And the leader, I learned after all those years, was that young man sitting in the back, smiling, watching us enjoy our ride, knowing what was ahead of us. That was the true leader of our boat. So I learned, and that's one of the things I talk about, is leading from behind, is pushing your people forward and being that calm presence that helps them to push forward with confidence, because they already know they can fall back on you.
Absolutely. That's a good reason to write a book. Absolutely.
I just wanted to share it with people. You know, people throughout the years said, wow, Chris, this resonates with me. So I thought, you know what? Let me give this a shot. I'm not a writer, and it was hard. And I hope it came out good for the people that have read it. I hope you get something out of it. But it was definitely a challenge.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because I'm not a writer either. And my book was written on the road verbally. So it was, wow. It has great tips and stuff, but it was definitely a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so hard. So
tell me about a time that the canoe flipped over and the whole team is underwater. And how did you get back up and get back down the river?
So I tell a story in the book about, I got assigned to a property. I was known through my career as kind of a turnaround guy. I in hotels, there are turnaround GMs, there's growth GMs, and then there's, we call them maintenance GMs, right? And everybody has a role. Some people really like a hotel that's humming along and keep it. I liked it messy. And the reason I liked it messy was it gave me something really to do. And then the funny part was a lot like the movie about, what's his name, Talladega Nights or Ricky Bobby, his dad, when everything gets perfect, he gets itchy. And that's kind of how I felt. Like when everything got smooth, I was ready to go on to the new hotel. You know, but I was assigned to a hotel in North Carolina. It was like 2007 or 2008. Big hotel, significantly underperforming financially, underperforming service-wise, underperforming on just generally every metric you could have. And it's a good quality hotel in a great location. Just didn't make sense to me. I was working in Houston at the time. So I did an initial analysis, and this kind of shows you where my mind started to change. I think I was probably about 34 then, and I did a financial analysis, and I was really good with numbers. That was one of my skills, was understanding the numbers and knowing how to make numbers work for a building. So I did a numbers analysis, and I had a on paper analysis, but I hadn't been to the hotel yet. So I show up at the hotel, and we're walking around the hotel with the leadership team, and I'm watching the leaders walk me around, and a couple of the leaders are, you know, they're pointing to stuff. They're like, oh, this is new wallpaper, and this is what we got here, and this is our team member.
And I'm watching them walk past dust on the floor and trash in the driveway and trash cans that, you know, had stains on them from the weekend. And so what had happened was the mission had gotten lost. The team had gotten to the point where they were just comfortable and they just weren't seeing what was possible. Right. I believe in possibility, not only in what a hotel can do, but in people's careers. If you talk to people that were on my team ever, we were always pushing for their possibility. I can't tell you how many people I've had the honor of working with that are now VPs, SVPs, that have just seen their possibility in the business because they believed in an integrity-filled way of doing business, that right is right, wrong is wrong. Okay. So anyways, I got assigned to this hotel, and the minute I got there, I knew that I didn't have all the right people in the boat. And I talk about this in the book, and it's one of the most difficult chapters to write. I had to make some serious changes. So I'm there a week, and I had determined what the changes were going to be in the staffing. And so we made some very difficult changes in leadership, but I made them all at once. I knew where I wanted to go because I had been down this river. I'd seen hotels come out of this trouble. So I was sitting in the back more now, seeing what the landmines were. And I knew if we didn't change it, we were never going to get through the river. So we made those very difficult changes, much to the disappointment and disagreement of a lot of people. You know, what I've learned is, and it's one of the toughest things about leadership, is you've got to make the right decision even when it's difficult. And your team may not understand at the time. They may not agree at the time, and they may not like you very much at the time. However, if the decision you make is filled with integrity, you treat people fairly and honestly when you make those decisions, you come to agreement, and then you move forward thoughtfully about where you're going, and you have a plan, then your team can get on board. And that's what happened here. So we made very difficult changes. I think we changed about, you know, 30-plus positions in the hotel in that one day. And it was a bad day at the hotel. And it was a hard day. I mean, I'm a heart-led leader. So seeing people have to make changes and kind of go at work in other boats, it's not easy for me. However, it's the right thing. And I can tell you that tough and firm is often very, very kind. So a lot of the people that changed that day went on to find things they really loved because they just weren't happy anymore. And that was going in the hotel. So I call everybody together for a meeting. Everybody's still in shock. And bring them into the ballroom. And I say, okay, that's it. We're done with that. Now we're going forward. And this is your team. This is your teammates. This is the structure. This is where we're headed. We're going to be a top-rated hotel. We're going to double our bottom-line financials. And you guys are all going to see the biggest bonuses you've ever had. And I said, if you trust me. And so I can tell you they didn't just immediately go, yeah, yeah, we trust you. However, what I can tell you is what they realized is by having some people leave the boat, it freed up a lot more room for the people that wanted to paddle to paddle. And it did. And they really did. And so I can tell you that we actually turned the hotel from underperforming and the worst hotel in our system to the number one hotel in 11 months in our company. And it stayed the number one hotel in our company for 10 more years after that, even after I left. Because like I told you, when I fix something, I'm ready to go. So I only stayed there 14 months and I moved on. I got promoted to the corporate office after that. But the hotel, I turned it over to a mentor of mine who used to be my GM, and he ran it for the next 10 years as the number one hotel in our company. So it can happen, and you see the belief grow. I actually had one of the associates come into me a year later and say, I didn't like you that day. I didn't agree with what you're doing, and I didn't understand. However, I see it now. And thank you for being a person of integrity. And that's all you can really ask for.
Well, now, you know, one of the things that tend to happen usually when there's changes in management like that is that you tend to lose a lot of people, not because they don't want to work anymore. It's just that they don't know the new manager that's coming in and they don't know how they're going to fit in the puzzle. So what are some of the things that you usually do to just to comfort them and give them confidence and just let them know, hey, this change is going to be happening, but it is not going to affect you personally?
Well, so I'm a truth teller. So here's the thing, Bruce. One of the things I've found that most new leaders and sometimes even seasoned leaders don't like to do is have tough conversations.
Some of those conversations that you're asking about, that's the biggest thing you got to do is talk. And sometimes I can be so blunt and that people are kind of taken aback. But the reason I do that is it's very clear. So if you were coming over to the team and I was talking to you, I'd say, Bruce, listen, the hotel hasn't been performing. You're the head of the rooms division, and we have not been meeting our sellout thresholds. We have not been meeting our upsell thresholds. Our a welcome of our valued guests is below the brand standard. I expect those things from you. If you can give me those things, Bruce, we're going to get along fine. If you can't, then I'm going to need someone else that can do it. Are we clear? And, you know, that's not a mean. I value you, Bruce. I'm excited about you, and I think you have a great attitude. But these are the things that are the benchmarks I got to have you do. And when you get agreement from people, and, you know, I'm assuming Bruce is going to say, heck yeah, Chris, I'm ready to go. I'm going to do this. I can do it. I'm on the board. I'm on the team. It's very easy to have counseling conversations or success conversations after that point, because 6 months later, if it's not happening, or actually for me, it's not even 6 months, you know, 90 days, I'm like, Bruce, we talked about this, this, and this. It ain't happening. You know what normally happens? People say, yeah, this is not for me. I mean, they get it. You know, it makes the whole thing, it changes the dynamic. So I think it's all about really having those conversations. People really shy away from difficult conversations, and I don't know why. I actually think, I don't want to write another book, but if I did, it would be how to have difficult conversations with integrity, you know, and still honor people, but help them understand why they've got to do their part. You know, we offered you this role. You said you could do it. Somebody's not holding up their end of the bargain.
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, being any type of leader is usually pretty difficult, especially when it comes to, you know, your family and trying to stay committed to your family and trying to be there. Is usually you can't do both at the same time all the time. I can imagine some of the struggles you went through. Can you talk about that and some of the things that you did to kind of smooth things over, so it kind of balanced?
That's a great question too. So I will tell you that in the beginning, I didn't do a great job. But what I noticed was, as I became more self-aware, which I think is really important as a leader, is to understand yourself. Take as many assessments as you can, read them, learn about yourself. I took one assessment from one of the companies I used to use to do assessments called Blue Water Advisory out of Baltimore. Great company. But it was about 100-page report came back. And as I started reading it, it not only tells you how you see yourself, but it also tells you how you see yourself when you're at your best and when you're at your worst. And then it says how other people experience you when you're at your best and at your worst. And some of the things that I saw at my worst, I was embarrassed about. And I could see, before that, I didn't realize that my confidence level or my directness could sometimes become off as being aloof or uncaring. So I had to massage that and make sure that people understood that I care, that the goal wasn't just financial performance. The goal was them first, which led to great financial performance, right? So anyways, as I became more self-aware, I realized, listen, if I'm feeling burnt, my people are probably feeling burnt. I'm a high capacity person. But you know, you go into work, I used to get to work at 7, 6:30, as GM of a big hotel where I have to be there, but I was there and I would work till after dinner service a lot of days, 7:30, 8:00. And then you're back on the weekends, you're catching up on paperwork Sunday morning. And that took a toll. You know, I had a young family, and so what I realized was, if I'm doing that myself, I'm doing two things. And this is, you know, there may be some people that listen to this podcast that say, Chris, why are you saying this? But it's the truth. I was setting an example that wasn't even fair to my staff, you know? Mm-hmm. So in today's world, well, two things. One, if you can't get your job done in the 40, 45 hours that we talk about when we hire you, something's wrong. The job's too big. You're not well-trained. You don't have the tools you need. We have too much expectation for that role, okay? So there's a bunch of problems we need to figure out. And as I grew later in my career, I would talk to our heads of HR about that. You know, some people used to come to me and say, Chris, I'm killing it. I'm working 80 hours a week. And later in my career, I'd say, your job should be 45 hours, 40 hours. If you're not getting it done, we need to talk.
that's the, you're not impressing me by putting in 80 hours. I want you at home with your kids. I want you at home. I want you at the recitals. I want you, you know, and listen, it's a 24/7, 365 business, but you need to have quality of life. Cause if you don't, you will quit. You'll get burnt out and you'll leave. So we, the last 5 years, I've spent a lot of time with the CEOs and presidents of other management companies and brands talking about how do we make a better quality of life for people? Because it is a hard business, right? You're working when everyone's off, right? When do people go to hotels? When they're off, right? So that's when we're working. So there's always this balance of what's the best way to take care of people. And I think you've just got to commit to it as an organization. At Chesapeake Hospitality, we talked about possibility, you know, experiencing what's possible. That meant for me, in your career, in your family life, in your hobbies. So we had to commit to that and make sure there was room. And then at Remington, our slogan was the place where passionate people thrive. But we didn't want you just to be passionate about hotels. I mean, if you're passionate about artwork or hiking or, you know, our chief commercial officer, Raul Maranta at Remington, he's a runner and he would go all over the world. He ran in the Berlin Marathon and he ran in the New York Marathon. He was passionate and he had to do that stuff to be whole. Because here's the deal. You bring anything less than your whole self to work every day, nobody wins.
That is true. That is true. You know, you, especially when we're dealing with staff and employees, there comes this bump in the road where we figure out that, okay, this employee is not pretty much up to standard when it comes to their job. And from my experience, it's either skill or will. How do you figure out, hey, should I, how do you figure out if it's a skill issue or a will issue?
Well, I think there's, and I agree with you 100%. If we've done our part as the employer, now that's assuming a lot in today's world. You know, in today's world, I like to tell a story about, we do a lot with a lot less nowadays than we used to. You know, a 250 room Hilton in 2001 would have 250 employees. In 2010, after the financial crisis, after 9/11, that dropped down to about 150. Then you, after the financial crisis, when we had to optimize the bottom lines and all the new financial structures came into place, banking regulations, that dropped down to about 120. And today, you're probably talking about 100 associates running a 250-room hotel. Used to be 250 associates. So what gets lost? Training gets lost. All the assistant jobs are not really present as much as they used to be. Assistant GM, assistant F&B director. So where are your next people coming from, right? So there's a big challenge for us as the hotel business and industry, ensuring future leaders are ready to go, because we've got everybody working hard, right? Everybody's doing head down, grinding. How are they training the next generation? So I think the organizations that are investing in that, like we were at Remington, will see success because you've got a bench strength for your future. But to your question, I think that you owe people conversations. You've got to make sure you've done your part, all the tools, all the training. Once that's done, then there's really no holds barred. And I think, Bruce, the important part is asking that question. Do you want to be here? I mean, but see, that might make people cringe a little bit, but when you ask those kind of questions, sometimes it frees people up. You know, if I said, Bruce, you've been trained, you did this, and yet, you know, we're only asking you to, you know, recognize our platinum honors members, our diamond honors members, well, you know, with a special greeting and give them this card, and you only did 30% last month. I just got to ask, do you want to do this job? Because if you don't, it's okay. Give them the freedom. And Bruce might say, you know, Chris, I really want to be an artist and I'm just here making money. That's okay too. But here's the deal. While you're here, you've got to do this thing I'm asking you to do with these diamond members. You have to. That's part of the job. If you can't do that, then we can't work together. It doesn't mean I don't like you. It just can't work together. Those questions can be very, I can't tell you how many times in my career I'd ask a tough question like that. And people would be just like, you'd see it. They just relax. I really don't. I'm only here because I need to whatever, this, that, or the other, you know, and they would just change everything. You know, as we're talking, I'm just reminded that
that this is something I always tell people is you've got to be straightforward. You got to be truth teller. And people may not like it, but I mean, again, I was just on a podcast with my former VP of HR. She asked me to be on her podcast. I was a truth teller for her. And we had some very difficult conversations. She couldn't understand what was keeping her from going from director at corporate level to VP. And finally, I had to share some really hard to hear information. But here's the key. I had developed a relationship with her where she trusted me and knew that whatever I said was for her good. And that's the key, right? If your team sees you doing one thing, saying one thing and doing another, or you say, whatever, we got to all pitch in for this banquet flip, and then you're out back smoking a cigarette or you're gone to the club to play tennis and they're flipping, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. You know, they got to believe you got their back. Like I told you, like this picture on this book, they got to believe that you are sitting right there watching them thrive as the leader and that you're not going nowhere. You're steering the boat still, you know? So.
I agree. And even I, especially in the beginning, I had issues with that, you know, because I had so much going on in the beginning of my career, I didn't know how to delegate.
Yeah.
So I was the one, I felt like I was roaring the whole boat by myself and they were just sitting here getting paid. But it wasn't them. It was me.
Whose fault is that? That's your fault. You know,
that's right. That's right. Yeah. I get it. I get it 100%.
We do that too. I mean, I see leaders do that out of kind of like self-preservation. It doesn't sound like you were doing that. Here's the risk. You wouldn't have made it to where you are, or me either, if I wasn't capable at my job. Does that make sense, right? Like without any ego, I was a good GM. I did a good job, you know? I was a good F&B director. I was a good director of rooms, AGM. So I had some success. And sometimes when you have some success, especially when you're moving in a fast-paced business, the tendency is to just, Bruce, I got this, and just pick up that thing, and you handle it. Because I can do it twice as fast as Bruce. Problem is, Bruce isn't learning anything. So you let Bruce, and also, it's hard. It's like when you have kids, watching them get ready to crash their bike, you want to jump in and grab the bike, but they need to crash. If they don't crash, they're not going to learn. And that's something we really resist as leaders of businesses, is seeing people take risks and maybe crash. And I think the best leaders are okay. They're strong enough that they know their organization. They know if they have a little crash, it's still going to be inside the river. It's not going to be jumping over the riverbank and going somewhere else, you know? So if you have a strong organization, little crashes lead to big successes.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. My last and final question is, what's going on now? How are you? Ever since you left, you've been able to relax. You take a vacation. What's going on with Chris Green now?
I'm having an incredible time. You know, for the first time since I was 18, which is now 36 years ago, I guess, I have some free schedule time. I've been playing some tennis. We went to Italy. My wife and I went to Italy for 10 days and had some downtime in Italy. We founded a charity back in 2020, my wife and I did, and I've been working in that foundation a little bit the past few weeks. I'm doing things like this, talking to people about leadership. I've got a couple of speaking engagements coming up, and I'll be speaking at a couple of the big conferences here in the fall. I'm not leaving the industry forever, but I'm going to probably be more thoughtful about my schedule now after, and I'm making space. You know, I always said I wanted to make space for the next generation, and so I had a good run, and I think that there's space now for future leaders, and there's a lot of them out there to grow into these roles. And I'm happy to help. It's incredible what I'm learning about all the information I have and I've learned over the years, how I can help advise other organizations in seeing success in conversations like this. Just imagine if you could just get your leaders in an organization to grab a hold of these thoughts. Just who's in the boat. Just where your river's going, just what the hidden rocks up front in the river are, by making sure that your leaders are well trained. If they can grab a hold of these concepts, the sky's the limit.
Absolutely. Listen, you're finally able to see the rainbow. You see many rainbows.
Don't get me wrong. I love the hotel business. I love the people. I love the industry. I love hospitality.
It's in my blood. It'll never go away. But it is interesting to take a step back. And you know, the funny part, and I'll tell you one quick story. I know we got to go. I mean, everybody wants to overestimate. So let's just say I got 200 emails a day, and I think that's low. I used to get 200, and I would look at my calendar, and you could look at my calendar on Outlook, and it was boom, 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 boom every day, flight, meeting, Zoom, Teams, client event. I mean, all over the country, you know, traveling to the Caribbean, traveling to West Coast, wherever. That was my schedule. I pulled up my schedule yesterday, and for this week, I have you, and I have 2 tennis lessons, and I have a recital for my daughter. And I get on average 3 emails a day. So it's a big change.
That's what I'm talking about. Tell everybody how they can get the book.
So the book, you can find The River Guide to Leadership. You can find it on Amazon.com, of course. I would love to have you have it. Also, you can find me and everything about me at wchrisgreen.com.
Fantastic, fantastic. Thank you so much, Chris, for coming on the show. We'll be seeing Chris again probably next month on a different show. And anything you want to say before we close out?
I just want to thank you for all you're doing, Bruce. You know, taking this message of hospitality out to the world and doing what you're doing. I'm proud of you and thankful for leaders like you in this business.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Much appreciated. And that's our time. Everybody, this is Bruce Jordan, the Michael Jordan Hotel, signing out.